Hello, folks. It's another great afternoon here in Logan, Utah, and hopefully wherever you are. You're listening to Aggie Radio. I'm Jake Grossman with the USU Meditation Club, and this is Mindfulness on Air, a radio show we've been talking about, a series of using mindfulness, meditation, and basically it's a way of paying attention to the present moment by using meditation, yoga, breathing techniques, a whole range of activities, could be ordinary moments in your life. But it involves consciously bringing awareness to our thoughts, our feelings, without making judgments about them. It's a method for observing what is happening right now in our bodies, minds, the world around us, our connection with others, the earth itself. And so we have a meditation club here on campus that meets Wednesdays at 3 p.m. here in the TSC, room 335. But if you can't make that, there's this weekly show we have here, as well as other groups around the valley. That's listed on our page. Or if you'd like to contact us through our email, it's usumeditationclub@gmail.com. And so today's another lucky day for us here, not because you get to hear me again, but we have another special guest. Today we have on Denise Gackstetter. She is a lecturer in the Department of Art and Design. She's a yoga instructor, meditation practitioner, as well as she's also has received the award for Outstanding Supervisor Award for last year, or the last school year. I was there at that ceremony and seen you receive that. So that was pretty neat too. Another thing among many lists that she has done and accomplished. But welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jake. I appreciate it.
So how are you doing today?
Doing well. It's a beautiful day out there in the valley. Can't complain at all.
And so one of the first questions I like to ask our guests to kind of break down the generic definition I've talked about with mindfulness or meditation, to really crack that open. They've seen, people that have been listening have seen a it's very dynamic, multidimensional, but really personal as well. It's just different for every person. So what does meditation really mean to you?
Meditation for me is a quality of attentiveness that we bring to each moment. There's a sense of remembering. Mindfulness, basically, as far as my understanding goes, the word in Pali actually means to remember. So the idea of being mindful means remember to be present or remember to be awake mm-hmm. for every possible moment. And of course, there are times where it's easier to do that and other times where it's not. But we, you know, cultivate our intention to be as present as possible. So mindfulness is a quality of attentiveness. It's our ability to be awake and present, to be able to focus our attention or open our attention to whatever is happening in the moment, whether it's internally or externally, because certainly we, as we practice, we have the ability to direct our awareness wherever we need to have it be at the moment or wherever is most beneficial in that moment, whether it's in our body or whether it's externally or paying attention to someone else or, you know, I mean, we all have it. We do it every day. If we didn't have it when we brushed our teeth, our toothbrush would end up in our nose. It's just that we aren't really aware of it. So we all have that ability innately. It's just a matter of cultivating it and exercising it and honing and refining it.
Nice. So cultivating, really building this trait, this quality. So it's not just an innate, well, it can be an innate ability more or less born with, but it's something we can cultivate, mm-hmm. something we can train, develop as a skill, a tool, as well as what sounds like a way of life almost that can be used to support our everyday life. Mm-hmm. Everything we do. You mentioned mm-hmm. we use mindfulness, we use awareness throughout our lives, but it's what we're placing our attention on is what's most important.
Mm-hmm. And I think what's also very important is the intention of why we're doing that, why we're focusing our awareness on that particular thing at the time. Intention is very powerful. Attention shapes our thoughts, our actions, our feelings and emotions. So I think the intention behind what we're doing is also as important as where we put our attention. A thing that I also want to say about mindfulness is that in several different countries, and I'm not going to remember exactly the Pali word for it, I'm not so good at remembering all the words for everything, but I think the word is citta in Sanskrit. And it basically is the word that means heart and mind. In many countries or in many languages, the word for heart and mind is the same word. There's not a definition. So a lot of times when we think of mindfulness in this culture or in Western Buddhism, a lot of times people focus on it being the intellect or the mind itself, the physical brain. But there's actually a physiological connection in the body. There's something called the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve is a nerve that connects your mind to every other organ in your body. It's also known as the wandering nerve. And it's a two-way street. The vagus nerve takes messages from the brain out into the body and also receives messages from the body up to the brain. So that's really important. And it also is very much connected to the heart. And so there's a quote by Jon Kabat-Zinn that I'm not going to exactly remember. Jon Kabat-Zinn, who we all know has done, you know, the full catastrophe living and mindfulness-based stress reduction. He says, if you don't think of mindfulness truly as heartfulness, then you're not getting it. And he says that we can really think of mindfulness as a sort of kind and affectionate, focused awareness. And I like that because it really does imply that there is a sort of sense of kindness, a sort of heartfelt quality to mindfulness, which I think there really is. It's not a dry intellectual process.
Right. It's a really centered, connected, integrated within yourself, very profound way to find that grounding and centering, that self-discovery, but also that connection with others. In fact, isn't there, I may not know or not sure 100%, but isn't there actual neurons in the vagus nerve? Mm-hmm. So we are actually,
yes,
not just the emotional feeling from the heart, but you can actually feel and live from the heart and that presence. And so why is that? Can you elaborate a little bit more on why that's important? You've mentioned it's not just a dry academic. I've hoped, folks, you've kind of caught on to that. It's not just for mental illness or for well-being in the mind or just a simple tool to achieve the means to an end, but can really integrate throughout your lives and connections with others. And so could you elaborate on...
Sure. For me, the idea of making sure that we include the quality of kindness or affection in the quality of mindfulness is important because it helps us to be a little bit more curious about ourselves. In the process of cultivating mindfulness, in the practice of meditation, a lot of our own stuff comes up, and we've begun to see sort of things that we've done and things that we are doing and, you know, reflecting on where we've been, where we're going. And there's a lot of self-criticism and self-judgment that is really part of what I call the culture of discouragement that we sort of cultivate in our larger Western culture. It's very interesting. Being a teacher, I see it all the time, kids who don't feel good about themselves from small level all the way through adults, myself included. And, you know, to discourage, and the word courage means to be of the heart, right? Courage. And so discourage means to not encourage a heartfeltness. So we would like to be encouraging. So that quality of kindness is very important, and that when we can cultivate that for ourselves, and it's a pretty profound experience when you really start to feel that sense of, oh, my own sense of value of worth and kindness, and you can direct that toward yourself. But also then, as we turn our mindfulness outward, as we turn our awareness and our attention outward, again, having that kind of affectionate quality, so when we look out at the world, we have that same sense of gentleness, the same of kindness, as we look towards others, realizing, and through that kind of kindness, we can actually understand the connection together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so on a personal level, it's like being able to forgive ourselves for not meeting our own expectations, whether that's a conditioned view or just even in the practice of meditation when your mind has wandered or you're not meeting just whatever we're setting up. But then it gives that quality of that forgiveness.
It is something about forgiveness, but it's bigger than that. It's also bigger. Just about an acceptance. You know, realizing that this is how this is at this moment. This is this kindness allows me to be however I am without needing to forgive, without needing to be judgmental about it. I mean, I'm a human being with everything that I've done in my life that I bring with me is with me now. And I'm responsible for some of it, and some of it I'm not responsible for. So there's a kind of kindness in that acceptance of it. And it doesn't mean that I'm approving of it. Right. Or necessarily judging it, because certainly we are all, you know, have the intention to, you know, walk through the world in a more gentle way, or at least I hope that we do. I do. But again, certainly forgiveness can come out of that. There's that sense of kindness and compassion needs to be there before we can forgive. But I think just that, if you're thinking about it, it's sort of like how we feel when we look at, you know, a small child or a puppy or something. There's just this sort of very quality of kindness about it.
And then we kind of sense that connection. First, you mentioned that it's a recognition. It's being aware.
Right.
It's a recognition. It's acknowledging, seeing that this is how it is. And this is the way it is in a clearer way. But also just kind of holding that and being with it, as in, this is how it is right now, and it's okay to notice this, to be with it before we go about automatically habitually changing or judging. And so it's noticing this is how it is, and maybe that's okay. And you brought up seeing somebody else, maybe like they're suffering. Mm-hmm. It helps with that. We cultivate this compassion. We cultivate this presence, living from the heart. And you probably already notice it, but we can cultivate it even more. It seems to be how you feel that other person. Recognizing that nobody gets up in the morning, even people that do self-harm or depress or hate themselves, don't actually want to feel that pain.
Right.
And so nobody really gets up in the morning wishing to suffer, and just like, I don't want to suffer. And so it's kind of that recognition that here's another being.
Right, right.
And so it sounds like a spacious,
you know,
area.
I think that this quality of kindness does actually add to the spaciousness. It makes the container of what we can hold larger. Just when you think, you know, I mean, and you can feel it practice, you know, when you have a sense of kindness about yourself, or when you're looking at a friend and you sense that they're not well or that there's something going on with them, your ability to hold what they're going to tell you, or even not even if they're not telling you, just your ability to hold them in your awareness is bigger, as opposed to when we resist or we, you know, when there's a sort of compressed state of, you know, anger or hatred, which you can feel it physically in your body. And of course,
right.
As a yoga teacher, I'm really very much aware of the embodiment of mindfulness, the sense of how we're feeling internally as we respond to the external world, and what we see externally and how we respond internally, and being able to really sense those. I think one thing I also want to talk about is just that the idea of meditation, as it's frequently practiced and looked at in this culture, and there's lots of questions being asked now in the larger meditation world, which I think is wonderful. There's a lot of dialogue about how much do we hold to Buddha's teaching, how much can we do, you know, move through the secular teachings, how much science, you know, is influencing it, which is wonderful. The science is validating a lot of what, you know, the Buddha taught 2,000 years ago. It's just now that we have this hard science research and all the neuroscience studies and all that sort of thing. But I think one quality that's really important is when these teachings first were offered in the world, the teachings were offered for the benefit of many. The teachings were offered as a way of happiness for many. And in traditional, you know, Buddhist countries, when something is done and there's a sense of merit achieved through the practice, there's always a dedication that the merit of this practice will be for the benefit of all people. And I think if we can bring that intention to our practice, that when I sit, I am sitting to benefit myself, but I am also sitting to benefit all beings. And if you think about, you know, when I sit, when I come out of that space of sitting and I carry that sense forward, I'm a more patient person, a more kind person, more accepting person. I have a bigger view of things. That's going to affect the people in my immediate scenario, and then they carry a little seed of that forward, and that sort of like ripples out, you know. So really the idea of holding that practice as a larger means for me is really important. That is really at the center of my personal practice.
Nice. And you kind of brought up that that's how it developed and was kind of the more of the heart, the source, more of the point of practice, of meditation. But then you went on to explain that it doesn't matter what label you put on, what religion or non-religion you belong to, or status, whether you're scientist or philosopher, student, teacher, it doesn't really matter, because when we're developing this heart, this mindfulness, this meditation, cultivating the mind, what's really happening is, like you mentioned, we come out as better people, quote unquote, but no, we're really opening that space up in our heart, opening up our minds, and that is when we interact with other people. Mm-hmm. We're, as you said, more kind, more gentle, more open, and so it doesn't matter what you identify with, those are very human, mm-hmm. wonderful qualities, mm-hmm. to help cultivate, you know, greater good in yourself, mm-hmm. and in others. And so
I think you know, when I look back on sort of what we call the teachings or the grounded philosophies from, mm-hmm. which the meditation practice is based, it's very similar to the philosophical foundation of yoga. It's very interesting. We have what the Buddhists call the Eightfold Path, and in yoga we have what they call the Yamas and Niyamas. It's the Eightfold, there's eight limbs, and then within that there's these other principles. And what I find very interesting is how semantics, the way we respond to words, really affects how we think about things, because sometimes these things, like in the Eightfold Path, get translated as right mindfulness or right speech or right, and people really respond to the word right.
Right, like there's right and wrong.
Right, there's right and wrong instead of skillful or wholesome, right, correct. And so I think that if we can really rethink those words and use the word as wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, it really gives us a sense of the intention behind what we're doing. And again, getting back to this intention of why are we practicing? What do we bring to it? You know, what is our intention? Because as you practice moving with an intention, whether you're sitting on the cushion or you're about to prepare a meal, or as you walk into a classroom to teach, what is your larger intention? If you can stay in touch with that, that really shapes your actions. These principles that are sort of guiding universal sort of ways to think about behavior in the world for, mm-hmm. ourselves and within the larger culture, they really give us some really strong foundations to build from, as the principle of non-harming. You know, just think about that. If we all lived our lives based on the principle of non-harming, so that anytime we ever went to do anything, you know, if I'm buying a product at the grocery store, what is the larger implication of this product in the world? Like, I think back, you know, or if I'm about to walk into a classroom and I'm carrying anger, will I take that in, or can I, I'm walking in here with the principle of non-harming. Does, mm-hmm. that make sense? So thinking about these things that as ways to help us guide and cultivate our practice in, again, you know, bringing it together is the way we move it forward into the world.
Right, which is also another form to become aware of our interconnection as well, is like you just mentioned, how we will affect others when we walk in the room, where this product came from when we're looking at things, was it harmful to others so that I could have it, is we're starting to really open up that we're not just closed off living in our own world. In our minds we are, but we're very connected to the world, to the earth, and to others. Mm-hmm. So it not only is this a guide and a path, mm-hmm. to cultivate the mind or meditation or your lives, but also this becomes a way of life that then reciprocates that and develops your practice, your, mm-hmm. mindfulness, your meditation. Mm-hmm. And so one interesting thing is some folks say, well, I may not have time to do it, or I don't see how sitting down by myself or whatever will be helpful. But it's interesting, because when we take this time to invest in ourselves, to pause, to reflect, to really kind of let go of the story, to see reality a little clearer, be a little more grounded, less stressed, more open, spacious, coming from a feeling of the heart, then when we do interact with others, that is more helpful. We're going to be more kind. Mm-hmm. It is going to affect others, how we relate to them. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the selfish or angry or people that are just angry or upset. Don't go around helping people. They don't go around typically giving out money if people in need or even noticing somebody. People that are, when we're experiencing, myself included, I'm not one of those. I am. I get angry. I get upset. I'm closed-minded sometimes when I'm caught up in a moment. And so that happens. I notice I'm not as helpful. But when I've meditated or when I'm connected mindfully throughout the day, that spills over into everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just an individual thing. And it's more helpful when people on the surface would think, oh, that's just taking time out for yourself. But it's really not true. It helps out so many more, because kind people help others. Mm-hmm. Less stressed people help others, not people that are upset.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think, to remember that that the formal meditation practice is, it's sort of like the laboratory where we develop our skills. It's like the classroom. We need that formal practice, you know, the kind of consistency of practice in order to build and develop our capacity for kindness, for compassion, for wisdom, so that we can carry it out into the world. But it doesn't happen exclusively. I mean, it's not like when you sit, you're done, and then you get up and go. What you're doing in the sitting practice is actually cultivating these other awarenesses and cultivating our intentions so that we come into these moments day-to-daily life, off the cushion or off the mat. That's where the sort of the juicy part, sort of the messy life, is where the mindfulness can really help us be more present to what's happening. And what can happen is also, it's not just about developing, compassion and kindness. It's also about developing wisdom. And certainly mindfulness is also very much a part of developing that kind of sense of what is the most wholesome choice in this moment? What is the most wholesome action in this moment? And that wisdom is really combined with compassion. There's a traditional saying that wisdom and compassion are two wings of a bird. Yes. If you're too compassionate, you walk through life kind of gushy and you can easily be overwhelmed. You don't have a sense of wisdom. You don't even know what to do in the face of suffering. And at the same time, if you're too wise without having a heartfelt practice, you can be very kind of dry and intellectual about the practice and almost hard-hearted. Like you're not in touch with, the suffering of the world in some sense. So they really are two very important parts of this practice. If we think about this practice in terms of the way that it allows us to be connected with the larger world, connected with other people, it's a way that we can also cultivate empathy. And empathy is very different than sympathy. Empathy, as many of you know, is our ability to actually feel or have a sense. We can't actually feel what someone else has experienced because their experience is different than ours, but we have a sense of understanding. This is very interesting because to me, and there's a woman named Maxine Green, she's an educator, and she has a theory called Wide Awake in the World, Wide Awakenedness, and she uses it as a foundation of her educational philosophy, and I've really adopted it myself, my own teaching practice, that imagination, our ability to imagine what someone else is experiencing is really the foundation of empathy. So if you think about it, we never really think about how imagination is really an important part of our life and a part of our practice. Mm-hmm. But our ability to be able to imagine, it's our cognitive function that gives credence to someone else's reality, right? Because, I might be able to imagine what it's like for you to suffer because I have my own experiences that's similar. So that gives us a basis of understanding. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
and it's a real connectedness. Yeah, and again, it's that connectiveness.
Mm-hmm. It's a real meeting place to where our... what we think is our individual world, our own little bubbles kind of meet and join, because we can imagine, which is our imagination, but their reality.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to pull up where this quote or this idea came from, but there's this sense of that we cannot be a being in the world without being in relationship. So I can't you know, the idea of, I'm not even going to go into the idea of self and no self and all that stuff, because it's very complicated. But the idea of how I know myself is only based on the way that I see myself and all the roles that I have in relationship to the world. So there's a lots of mirrors that I can see myself back at. So I can then see how what I do affects others around me, and then what others do affect me. So again, there's that sort of mirror reflective quality. And then we also have this kind of cultural kind of consciousness, or what I love when Maxine Green calls it, the social imagination or social consciousness. And there's quite a bit of movement now. If people Googled social imagination, they'll really see that this idea of collective imagination as a way to be able to respond to the difficulties in the world, the idea that that doesn't all have to be solved individually. And the fact of the matter is, it can't be solved individually. We all have to work together to do that, and we are all part of this larger, greater consciousness, this larger, greater collectiveness. It's very interesting that way too, you know, and how that is a rich source of you know, possibility in the world, to look and see what we can achieve together, I think.
So what would be some ways to help stimulate or promote cultivate these connections, opening the heart, opening the mind, instead of just, well, I can understand their suffering because I've felt that, or I can imagine what it would feel like, but what are some other practices or just ways that maybe in an ordinary sense or ordinary daily lives that we can help really bring these up?
And you know, some people, first, I just want to say that some people say, well, I'm a generous person, and you know, and you are a generous person, but how can you be more generous? And being generous doesn't mean you have to just give money. Being generous means being generous with your time, being generous with, you know, your patience, with allowing, you know, just allowing more space, allowing others to be that way. There's like acceptance to me. When we look at the moment, that's why I was talking about mindfulness is really a heartfelt practice, because if you're being accepting, if you're seeing the world, it really is, that's an act of generosity in a way, because we're not expecting it to be something else. We are accepting and acknowledging things just as they are. There's a lot of generosity in just giving someone the space to be who they are, with all their inconsistencies, with all their frailties, with all their joys. That's really a big act of generosity, not trying to close them in or cut them off. Does that make sense, what I'm talking about?
Yeah, fit a certain image we have of them.
Right.
It's a good point. Really allowing, and allowing them to be, allowing ourselves to be, allowing others to be how they are.
So that's one very simple thing. If you start to think about that just as an act of generosity, you're already cultivating that. A sense of it. But there's lots of other things that we can do just in small ways. I do want to point to a really terrific organization called the Science Center for Greater Good. And it is based out of Berkeley, and I don't know if you're familiar with this, but they are doing all sorts of research about how to take mindfulness into the world, how it acts. You know, they're looking at gratitude and all sorts of different aspects of stuff. So people can look up, I think it's www.greatergood.berkeley.edu, and they have all kinds of amazing articles and resources there about how to develop our capacity to be connected and move through the world. But I think, you know, just some small things, like just the very, very smallest things that you can do, you know, allowing more time so that when you're on the road, you're not feeling rushed. So you're not putting that sort of pushy energy out into the world.
Right.
Like that, you may not think of that as an act of generosity, but it really is. It's an act of generosity for yourself, that you're actually giving yourself enough time to arrive somewhere in the space without being stressed. And you're also not out on the road with your pushiness, putting that energy out there in the world. You know, you can do small, very small things, like, you know, picking up trash as you walk by on the road. You know, maybe doing some small task for someone in your family. Certainly, there's lots of places to volunteer to help, you know, in different ways. You know, the food bank, there's opportunities at the senior center, within people's own churches, within their neighborhoods, those kind of things. But, you know, and realizing that generosity is a practice, you know, if and you may not even feel that generous that day. So you kind of fake it until you become it. You know, you might just pick up the trash and you're still grumpy, but that's okay. You did it. The fact that you remembered, you paid attention enough to do that. And then also One other really key component I think that's important, this is difficult for us as Westerners, is actually acknowledging our own good in ourselves.
Yes, that
because
is
we have a hard time because we think that if we acknowledge our own goodness, that it's a sort of sense of arrogance or boasting. And that's not the case, because we have to be able to acknowledge our own goodness because we deserve it just like anyone else. You mean, you're always pointing out all the wonderful things our friends do. So why is it such a hard thing for us to acknowledge our own goodness? Because then that's cultivating, again, kindness and generosity for ourselves. You know, and as we become more accepting and more loving of ourselves, our capacity to offer that to others gets bigger.
Wow. So the degree to which we can open up to ourselves mm-hmm. and be compassionate to ourselves, the degree to which we can open and be there for others, that's wonderful, because there is so much good. We just focus on the negative mm-hmm. within ourselves or at large. And there's a sense that I need to be disciplined or I won't have that motivation if I'm kind, but that is really outdated. That's mm-hmm. that's a false idea. Unless that works for you, if that works for you, then by all means, if you're more motivated, then I guess that works for you. If you're not harming others, but it seems in most cases, when somebody's kind to us, we feel a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't go around saying the things to other people that we say to our own minds, mm-hmm. that we say about ourselves. We wouldn't treat a friend mm-hmm. like that, but yet we'll say the most harsh things.
Mm-hmm.
Just when we, little slip-ups, mm-hmm. You know, I think, I'm such an idiot, why did I do that, or something. Mm-hmm. It could just be small like that. And we're this constant inner talk that, if that's where we're focusing our mm-hmm. attention, that's mm-hmm. what we just end up developing more and more.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is that's only a small, small fraction. We're programmed, we're conditioned to pay attention to negative mm-hmm. things so we can avoid them
mm-hmm.
or
right.
survive.
That's a part of survival. Mm-hmm.
But there's so much more
mm-hmm.
that just gets thrown under the radar that we don't take the time to mm-hmm. be aware of how wonderful this day is mm-hmm. or how many times I don't mess up, or how wonderful mm-hmm. I am and other people are. Mm-hmm. And it's not arrogance. It's mm-hmm. it's really opening to that possibility. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just a question. I'll throw that question out there to you. What would it be like if we were kind to ourselves?
What would it be like? We'd probably be a kinder world, and we'd be kinder to each other, because we recognize our own goodness, our own value, and because we feel valued by ourselves as human beings, it's much easier to value other people because we don't feel jealous of them. We don't feel as much anger at them or as much fear of them, because our sense of ourselves is more secure. And you know, it's an important part of a meditation practice to sense these things deep in yourself. Okay, and that's a part of, obviously, of mindfulness practice, or as I say, meditation and mindfulness, is to sense what in our body does it feel like. Oh, this in my body, this is what anger feels like. And it's going to be different for everyone else. Where do you notice it in your body? What mm-hmm. does it feel like? You know, what does joy feel like? So we always tend to focus on what the heart parts is, but what does joy feel like? What does love feel like? So that we can recognize it. We need to be able to recognize how it is in our body so that we're not confused by it later on. And as we come to understand that more in ourselves, there's a sort of inherent quality where we start to recognize it in other people as well. So when you're with someone else, and you know, when you're having a dialogue with sometimes and they might be angry at you, what you might actually begin to recognize is like, actually there's some fear underneath that. There's, right. I see in them, or I sense in them, because I know what it feels like in my own body, there's fear. Oh, and then you might be able to respond to them with a question about that. And so does that make sense? That
instead of defensive.
In a sense of just reacting, we're responding. Uh-huh. So we're trying to find some understanding because we have our own. Again, it's the building of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to know those things in ourselves.
Right.
And we have to know our own goodness, and we have to know our own joy, and we have to acknowledge that we are also good beings. And that's not arrogance. That's just, again, accepting what is really here.
And maybe embodying that, feeling mm-hmm. that, like you said, because it's really just buying the story, the thoughts that we may not be good to ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just, those are just thoughts. That's just a story. Mm-hmm. And coming to the body, where do I actually feel the anger? Mm-hmm. Where do I feel this unworthiness or whatever? Mm-hmm. Dropping the story is what helps. Mm-hmm. That's why coming back to the body is helpful. Mm-hmm. What does it actually feel like? Mm-hmm. What is the experience of being angry or whatever the emotion or feeling is, instead of the thoughts around it, mm-hmm. instead of, well, because of this and this, that's just building the story. That's really not feeling and living life fully. Mm-hmm. That's living out our...
And stories are important. Stories are, you know, the stories, we often have stories that are given to us as children. We have stories that we create as children to help us survive. I mean, right. The stories that we have in our lives are often things that we use to make sense
right.
of our time in that life or that space. Frequently, they're, unfortunately, sometimes there are stories that are given to us that shape us in ways that really are not beneficial or helpful. And then we carry them forward. Mm-hmm. And we propagate them. And so we can actually, we do need stories. They do help us make sense of the world. However, oftentimes they're debilitating. And what we need to do is remove that story, get out of that story for a while to actually see what is really happening. And then we reshape a new story. Yeah. And, you know, getting to be kinder to yourself, understanding your own value, that's a new story. That will help us make sense of the world. It gives us a new perspective on the world, right?
Right. And so it's kind of like a, like checking, coming home to the body, to our presence. Mm-hmm. Is this story accurate?
Mm-hmm.
And that's
exactly
more
right.
what I think I mean and I'm picking mm-hmm. up is, yeah, not throwing everything out, not denying everything. We're definitely not doing, we're acknowledging, we're recognizing mm-hmm. what's happening. And so instead of just in a story, we can come back home, pay attention. Where do we feel that? What does it actually feel mm-hmm. like? And is this relevant? Only by doing that are we going to know if this mm-hmm. is an accurate story or not. Mm-hmm. We're not going to know by mm-hmm. more proliferation about it.
Mm-hmm.
Only by stopping, reflecting, mm-hmm. and coming home, being grounded in it, actually mm-hmm. feeling it, will we know and sense that space where there is goodness in others. And earlier you mentioned we come to our sense of self or how we are by others. They're that mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we feel ourselves. That's how we come to that understanding. But then also, tying this all together, when we are good to ourselves, when we recognize that, when we're taking this time to meditate, cultivating the heart, we've mentioned how when we're interacting with others, we're more kind and helpful, mm-hmm. and that's great. But everybody then is viewing themselves through everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
We're a mirror then for everybody else
mm-hmm.
that we meet.
Exactly right. We're a mirror, and we're also a model.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you cannot change, you know. I remember when I was studying with Philip Moffitt at Spirit Rock, and we were talking about how I'd said how I really felt like, you know, the way that I'd really come to be kinder to myself and then had not have so much judgment and expectation about members of my family has really helped to, you know, shape. I feel like, you know, almost in a way, like they were responding to my kindness with kindness. And there had been some shifts that happened. And, you know, what he told me was, he said, well, you have to be careful, though, not to expect that that's always going to happen. Right. So, again, to be careful about our expectations. And he said, you know, that his father remained a mean, angry man all his life. But what changed for him was the way he responded to that.
Right.
When he went into the presence of his father, you know, he held a more kind space for himself. He held a kind space for his father, sort of wrapped that moment, wrapped those interactions with the kind of understanding of the suffering his father had. But he didn't pick up his old, angry, self-critical stuff that was part of his previous relationship with his father. His father didn't change, but he changed in the way he responded
right.
to the way his father is. Does that make sense? And yeah. that's huge right there. And that's really all that we can really do.
Mm-hmm. And that's an excellent point. As we've talked about before, that'd be great, but if we were going around or doing this just to change everything,
mm-hmm.
this would just be substituting this new technique to do what we're already doing,
right.
stuck in the mire. So it's not necessarily we're doing this to change everything, and not necessarily to change our own mind. It's to give that space. It's
mm-hmm.
to recognize mm-hmm. what is happening, allowing it, mm-hmm. being with it, but really just stepping back and seeing if there's more space to respond instead
mm-hmm.
of react. And so it's not
mm-hmm.
running away, it's not changing everything, it's it's noticing that quality of our reaction.
Well, and I think also this is where it's important to realize, you know, there's all these movements now, compassion and action and, mm-hmm. you know, off the mat into the world and all these things about, you know, how do we make wiser choices in the world? And this is another thing. This is another really important part of what this kind of practice can do, is that as we do not react, because if you think about it, react or recreate, right? Yeah. We're just propagating the same right. scenario over and over again when we react, as opposed to respond and thinking about pondering or thinking about or having, so that we can see things as they are. And then if we pause and think, what is the most kind, beneficial thing I can do now? What is the thing that will be of greatest benefit to all stakeholders? And it's, you're not always going to be able to make it work for everyone. And, you know, you're not always going to be able to make a great impact. But from this point of view, and it sounds like, oh, I must need 30 minutes every time anything comes up. But that's not the case. As you cultivate this practice and you develop a kind of bigger awareness and you develop your own wisdom, you start to see what is the kindest choice, what is the wisest choice at this time. And that's profound to me. You know, when I even think about, you know, the way that I stand on the earth, you know, what is the way that I stand on the earth? You know, do I push right. the earth away? Do I receive the earth to my feet? When I am walking across campus and I'm hurrying and I'm all caught up in my own mind and I'm bumping into people on the sidewalk, you know, like, I'm not aware. And mm-hmm. that's not wise, as opposed to give, you know, being able to move through the world in a way where I am caring for myself and caring for others, both forward and backward in time. And because I think this has a very profound effect about the way that we think about the world globally, the way we think about the world economically, the way we think about the world ecologically. Like, if we think about the choices that we make really affect our actions, which then, again, as I said earlier, ripple out into the world. You know, do I need to drive my car today? Would it be better? Could I take the bus? I'm sure it's going to take a little more time. And people go, oh, it's really inconvenient. But realizing that the choices we make, there's a reaction and another action, then another action. It's just like the law of physics.
Yeah.
You know, like for every action, there's an equal and responsive reaction. You know, like, you know, people want to call it karma or whatever, but really, there's all these physical laws, if you look at physics, that really relate to these sort of larger teachings. You know, it's very interesting.
Yeah. And talking about, well, that'd be inconvenient, you know, we can use our awareness and we can use logic along with the laws of physics, but we can use logic. Have we really thought that through? Mm-hmm. As well, it's inconvenient, this isn't helpful, whereas how are you paying attention to how we're walking on the earth, not paying attention to others running in, is that's what I'm picking up as wise or wholesome, is it's not beneficial, it's not helpful in a larger sense. And that walking around, running in, what I mean by it's not helpful is you're not getting anywhere any faster. And mm-hmm. and same thing with maybe inconvenient to not take a bus or something. It's not convenient when, you know, we don't have an earth anymore.
Right.
So, and this is just an example, folks, so I'm not trying to press that on any of you, but just think of our logic. We can really question that. There's nothing wrong with questioning our own.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, it isn't logic, as I'm pointing out, when we think that that's important or beneficial to do something, we haven't thought about it. We're just reacting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in a logical way to inquire into and reflect upon, is this helpful? We can come out with a whole different attitude, and that's really what changes, is the attitude.
Mm-hmm. The attitude and your intention.
Intention,
what
yeah.
is my intention? And I remember when I was sitting in retreat again at Spirit Rock, and someone was talking about how when we're in our car in traffic, we're not traffic. Everyone else is traffic.
Yeah.
So as we're sitting, like, everyone else is in our way getting when we need to go somewhere. And regardless of the fact, I mean, we all do it. We leave at a time instead of allowing ourselves more time. You know, I mean, what's 10 more minutes? I mean, again, we all have to make choices. And the choices that we make affect our lives, affect the people in our lives, and affect the larger world around us. And in finding a way to make wiser, more kind, more beneficial choices, not only for ourselves, but also for others and the larger planet, I think is really important. And to me, this practice is really the foundation of that. Having that part of the practice, bringing that in, has really given my meditation practice and my yoga practice, because to me, they're really very similar. I mean, asana is just a posture. What right. I bring to the asana is the yoga. It's that quality of attentiveness. That is what really makes the yoga yoga. But I think, again, that having this larger context, putting my individual practice into the larger context of a global practice, has really given it a depth that is really incredible. It's sort of like the idea of think globally, act locally. We all really can only really make changes in our own lives and make changes to our own practices or our own selves. But if we do them, it's one thing to just do that within the small isolated context of your own life. But if you make if you have the intention to make those changes or develop a practice, but looking outward to the larger good, that's going to be different.
Right.
Because it has a different context. You've placed yourself into a larger relationship, and we exist there whether we want to admit it or not. So it's very interesting to see how that can shape things.
And see where the lines blur. You can be doing it individually. I'll make this small change, mm-hmm. this purchase or non-purchase or whatever. But that's a vote, and that is mm-hmm. going to impact mm-hmm. all the other votes that are out there. And so if I vote for this product by buying it or not buying it, mm-hmm. or I vote by cleaning this place up or picking up trash, other people see that mm-hmm. or not. It is all contributing to where everybody else mm-hmm. lives, and that starts impacting mm-hmm. what's there.
Mm-hmm. And I think, just one part that's related to this is where also the idea of Sangha comes in.
Yes.
Spiritual friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Group of meditators
or
right, and a lot of people have difficulty coming to a meditation practice because in their mind what they see is, there's the classic pictures of people sitting cross-legged on the floor in some sort of blissful, sort of excruciatingly looking posture all by themselves, a mind closed, eyes closed, But when you sit in a group, when you practice with Sangha and you have people that are having shared intention, that's a very supportive environment. So while you do, yes, at sometimes you will be practicing individually, that connection to those friendships and the idea of sort of net support as a foundation, that's really powerful. And again, as you cultivate those kind of Sangha friendships, it's one more step into cultivating your practice in the context of the larger good.
Right, and which reciprocates that mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been very enlightening and wonderful. I've been looking forward to this conversation for weeks now. Just bringing in that heartfelt quality and just blowing this meditation apart in a non-harmful way to include others and yourself. We forget about that a lot. And so seeing meditation as a means to the greater good through non-harming compassion and generosity, this has been excellent. And it's been quite a privilege to have you on the show.
Well, thanks, Jake. I hope it was a terrific conversation and maybe just a slightly different perspective, but I think it's pretty powerful. And I would agree, we all probably do it. Again, it's just sort of making it more of an intention at the forefront. So
right. But before I let you go, is there anything coming up? I noticed there might be some yoga.
I actually am doing a workshop at the Whittier Center on Saturday called Celebrate Light. It's a 2-hour small workshop celebrating the summer solstice, but also the idea of lightness in your practice. And lightheartedness. We'll do a guided meditation followed by some creative asana practice and then followed with a long relaxation based on yoga nidra. And it's in the upstairs of the Whittier Center, and the Whittier Center is on 300 North and 400 East, and that's at 3:30 to 5:30. And otherwise, I'm also kind of currently not teaching anywhere, but I am available for privates, or I'll be also doing some other workshops coming up in the future.
Awesome. So that's this Saturday, I believe.
September 20th.
Mm-hmm.
June 20th. Sorry, so June 20th, yes, at the Whittier Center at 3:30. And it happens to be that June 21st, which is the summer solstice, is also the International Day of Yoga that has been designated by the UN General Assembly, which is pretty amazing. it's pretty amazing to think about that. So I actually believe that it won't be too long soon where we have a International Day of Mindfulness. I think that's next.
That would be great. That would be very mindful to do that next. And so, once again, thank you very much. And with that, folks, I think we could do a couple minutes of just putting some of the ideas we've talked about to practice and doing a little bit of an awareness exercise, meditation. Those that have been following along, you know that it can just be very ordinary part of your day. You can just take a few moments to pause, take a mindful breath, become aware of the sensations of breathing. You can bring a physical smile, which relaxes the face, calms the day, or an inward smile. Just really feel the presence right now, what's happening for you. It could be the sounds around you, birds chirping, people walking, a fan, sound of a voice. Just allow that to come to your physical sensations. What do you feel? What does it feel like to be alive? Not a mental exercise, thinking about these things, but what does it actually feel like? The felt quality from the inside out as you walk, the feet contacting the ground. Or if you're sitting, the sit bones against the chair, or whatever you're sitting on, back against the backrest. Just what does it feel like right now? Whatever your experience is, and just be with that for a moment, allowing it to be just as it is, really coming home. Coming home to this grounding, the presence, just allow yourself to be in this space, feeling the breath that really anchors us to this present moment, something we're doing constantly but hardly ever aware of. Just whatever you're thinking of, whatever's happening, just notice what that feels like physically in the body. Bring your awareness to the heart center. That can be your physical heart, be the center of your being. Just what does it feel like right now? Bring to your awareness something good in your life, something that is going good, going well. We focus on the negative, things we'd like to change that aren't happening. But what is it like to become aware of things that are happening? It can be a big event, new job, time off. Could just be small thing, spending time with friends or family, being alive, noticing the nice day out. Just really take that in. Feeling that shift of gratitude within the heart, within your being. Just allow yourself to feel that spread out, creating space, calming the rest of the body, relaxing the face and head, letting go of the tension in your neck and back. Even bringing an awareness to what we have and don't have, our limitations. Noticing that those are there. We may have limitations. All of us do in some way. But there's also so much more that we do have, that we can do. Just feel that continuing to spread out, relaxing the arms and hands. The organs, how much our organs, our heart, lungs do for us. Releasing the low back, the legs. Letting any tension and stress drain down and out your feet. And just take a moment to take in this awareness, this space, what it feels like to inhabit a body, to be alive, to just feel in this moment that we have enough. We can offer that space beyond. And notice when we offer that to others, include them in this space, allowing them to be just as they are. Maybe as we go throughout our day, notice how that impacts our interactions with others, with the world. To be connected, maybe have a little more clarity through this grounding practice. And this can be used in a formal taking time out, meditating, or even on the go. Driving, recognizing other people, standing in line. We can bring this gratitude, this awareness to whatever we're doing, allowing it to pervade our bodies, our being. Recognizing that we have unlimited space. We can offer the space to our thoughts, our feelings. We don't have to change everything right away. We can just offer a bigger container until we can deal with it or go about it effectively. And just notice what it's like when we go about our day. Living more from the heart. A little more clear with things as they are. And as we end our show today, just wanted to remind folks that if you wanted to actually go on retreat, take some time out, learn from a very respected, experienced teacher, two teachers that will be here in the Logan area. There's a retreat in Paradise, which is just south of Logan. We have a wonderful teacher, Susie Harrington and Alexis Santos. It'll be a residential retreat with two options. One's a weekend, 3-day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The other one's a 6-day, and that starts July 31st till August 2nd or August 5th if you'd like to stay the full time. Again, if you're interested, that's just an option for you. There's more information on our page, or you can email us usumeditationclub@gmail.com or inquire more or register at desertdharma.org. That's desert, DesertDharma.org. to register, check out those teachers or any other retreats coming up. Awesome opportunities to practice either here on campus with the club, tuning in weekly Thursdays, or going on retreat. And everybody, thanks for listening. Once again, you're listening to Aggie Radio. Have a safe, mindful day, and be careful over the weekend. Enjoy.